You're listening live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
Alabama's syndicated news talk leader, Right Side Radio. Phil Williams here live in the Right Side studios. Man, we got the local, the state, the national. We cover down on all of the issues. And like the dude just said, yes, we are solid conservative and just plain right. Well, welcome to Wednesday. Oh, Boomer's on the board. And Boomer, it's Wednesday.
Guess what day it is. Mike. What day is it, Mike? Leslie, guess what today is?
It's hump day.
That just still cracks me up. But let me jump over to my comments here for the day. Just starting off, this was inspired by a conversation that I had with someone yesterday, and I'll get to that part in a minute. But listen, I'll start off by saying this: there is nothing natural about jumping out of a perfectly good airplane. Nothing at all. But I did it. And I liked it. I always liked it. But truth be told, I always liked it more after I had landed intact, if you know what I mean. But there's something distinctly different about military jumps than civilian jumps. There's an old poster that I saw hanging on a wall at an airborne unit that had an image of a U.S. Army paratrooper. He was fully laden with combat gear, had his main and reserve chutes on, and the poster read, "I don't care how many skydives you've got. Until you've thrown yourself into the dark of night from a perfectly good airplane at 1,100 feet with 70 pounds of combat equipment strapped to your body, you have not lived." I agree. It doesn't mean, though, that it was like I was in any way fearless, not by a long shot. In fact, some of those jumps stand out from memory because of the sort of trepidation I had going into them. But some of them also stand out not because of the jump, but because of the men that I was with that inspired me. And I can think of two right off the top of my head. One of them was my first ramp jump off the back of one of the Army's last C-7 Caribous, a small to medium twin-prop cargo plane. Until that day, I had always jumped out the troop doors on the side of an aircraft, or from a helicopter. But in those cases, the jumper exits the aircraft on command, right? The jumper is told to leave. But on this particular day, there was a Green Beret named Master Sergeant Chastain. He was a jump master. He was working from the ramp. He gave us all the commands. He went to conduct his last outside air safety check, looked down to spot the drop zone. I stood there waiting for him to turn around and tell me to jump while he watched. Nope. I will never forget the adrenaline rush I got when that Master Sergeant Green Beret turned around, looked at me, and yelled, "Follow me!" And he turned and stepped off the ramp into the blue sky. Man, I was pumped, to say the least. I think I would have jumped without a chute. It was inspiration in action. But listen, I said there were two jumps. I remember another jump with another unit and another guy, a staff sergeant. He was in the stick right in front of me. We were jumping from a Chinook helicopter. I said something right before the jump, and he looked at me and said, "I hate doing this. I'm scared of heights." Well, that was kind of surprising to me. I mean, he'd been in the Ranger Regiment. He had way more jumps in his log than I did. I said, "So why do you do it?" And he yelled, as I yelled over the prop wash, his only answer was to stare at me like he couldn't believe I would even ask that question. And then he went off the ramp ahead of me at 1,200 feet. And I'll be honest, I was inspired. Two different inspirations from two different men, both doing the same thing. One of them seemed absolutely fearless. The other one was scared to death, hated doing it, but did it anyway. Now listen, it's easy to be inspired by people that seem to have no fear, and that's a fact. And we need people like that, people that are calm, cool, and collected no matter what the crisis. The kind of folks that can yell, "Follow me," and lead people to do things that they might not otherwise have done. But I'll tell you what, I am also so inspired by people who are scared to death, but they do what's needed anyway. Folks like that staff sergeant who is admittedly scared of heights. He hates jumping, but he wouldn't dare think of not jumping. In fact, that might even be more inspirational. You see, what kicked all this in was just yesterday I met with a friend who had recently run for office. And I say run because she did not win the election. But I told her that what she did was amazing. She had never run for office before and took a longtime political insider who had years of name ID and took that guy to a runoff. I mean, she may not have won, but she made that guy work like he's never had to work. And I'm inspired by that. She got out there. She put her name on the line. She got busy with no political experience, and she made the other guy panic. John Wayne is said to have made the statement that Courage is being scared to death and saddling up anyway. Well, we need some folks to saddle up. And now more than ever, perhaps. We need some folks who may have never called a radio show or written a letter to the editor or spoken up at a town hall meeting or questioned anybody on their school board or, for that matter, never run for office. We need folks who may have never done those things to do those things, and for some it will be as natural and as easy as it was for Master Sergeant Chastain to yell, "Follow me," and throw himself out the bird. But for others it'll be more like that staff sergeant who hated jumping, who was scared of heights, who jumped anyway. Both of them right off the edge into the abyss, both of them leaders in their own right. It's amazing what the actions of one person can do to galvanize a community, a state, even a nation. It's not always the ones that you would expect. I mean, like, biblically speaking, no one expected young David, the sheep herder, youngest in his clan, too small to wear armor, but he had grit. And David walked down into the valley when no one else would, and he confronted a true giant, but he was confident. But Scripture does not say that he was not scared. I mean, what it does say, though, is that he was incensed by injustice and the mocking that he heard, and he saw that no one else was going to do anything. It also says that on his way down to the field of battle, he stopped and he picked up 5 smooth stones. 5. He killed Goliath with 1 stone, but he had a handful in case it turned into a bigger fight. And David galvanized the nation of Israel. It turned the tide. He was an inspiration. Well, listen, there's a bunch of y'all out there that have far more capability than you give yourself credit for. And the idea of doing something, of putting your name out there, of sticking your neck out, that can seem almost terrifying. And I know it. I get it. But let me end with this. On 9/11, countless heroes showed themselves in the midst of the chaos at the World Trade Towers and the Pentagon. And among them was a young firefighter, a guy named Stephen Siller, who died when the towers came down. His brother Frank was the oldest of the Siller siblings, and when Frank was just 22 as the oldest, his father passed away, and a year later the Siller boys lost their mother too. And for years thereafter, Frank took care of his younger brothers. Stephen Siller was 14 years younger than Frank. And Frank was just a guy, just doing what he could. He became a businessman, but he had no amazing resume. But when his younger brother Stephen died as a firefighter at Ground Zero, Frank decided he had to do something. So he formed a memorial foundation that we've all heard of now called Tunnel to Towers. Now, I don't know that he even had any experience with foundation work or raising money or being in the public eye, but he was inspired by his brother and others like him. And today, 20 years later, the Tunnel to Towers Foundation has raised over $250 million to pay off mortgages and build smart houses for the families of veterans and first responders that are wounded or lost in the line of duty. Over 450 houses built or paid off so families will not have the burden of paying a mortgage or living in a home that does not accommodate their line of duty injuries. And I tell you that because Frank was just a guy. He didn't have a grand plan, no deep pockets, no crazy cool resume. He was just a guy. A guy who got a burr under his saddle and got busy. And I'm going to tell you right now, we can't do without folks like that. And some of you out there listening to me right now, you have vastly underestimated your own capacity to inspire others. And we need you. And that's a wrap for the Right Side Way. Well, I said all the time, I mean, this show exists for the very reason of doing things like what I call the 4 E's. We're going to enlighten, empower, entertain, and educate you every single day best we can on the issues. But that empower piece, that was what that whole monologue was about. We need people like my friend who ran for office. She may not have won, but by God, she made them work. And she showed them who she was, and a vast swath of our community turned out behind her. I'm just going to tell you, folks, we need people like that willing to get busy. Get busy. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Y'all stay tuned. We will be right back. And we are back, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, covering all of North Alabama, solid conservative, just plain right, saving the world one soundbite at a time. Paul from Athens, who I think has the award for being our most prolific texter, just texted me with regards to being, we say this in the paratroopers, but in the airborne troops, but he says, it's not the fall that'll hurt you, it's a sudden stop at the end. Yes, you, my morbid friend, you are correct. I got a caller on the line, Boomer. Oh, is that Allie? Yeah, Allie from Athens is online too. Allie, how you doing?
I'm doing well, and I have a very cool Yom Kippur tale of courage that a whole lot of people outside of Israel do not know about. If you're game.
Okay, we got about 2 or 3 minutes. What you got?
Okay. Colonel Golani of the Golan Heights, when Israel was attacked in 1973 on Yom Kippur. There'd been bad intel. They didn't think it was coming, and they aren't very often caught, you know, flat-footed, but they were. Well, excuse me, General Golani, wasn't Colonel. He and another guy, one other guy, took one tank from the Golan Heights, and they went down, and then they flipped the tank around and turned the lights on and came back up, turned the lights off and went down in the blind, turned the lights back on, came up, and they tricked the Syrians into thinking that an entire battalion was coming up the hill.
Oh, that's awesome.
And it was just, yeah, it was just the one tank. One guy, you were talking about one guy and his guy, they made the difference in the Yom Kippur War.
That's cool.
And that's not a story that's all that well known outside of Israel, but I want to tell you one other thing. I got to go to that base where it happened, and the reason why was because I was in Israel. Our tour director had served in the IDF. He was a colonel. He had served under Moshe Dayan. So he got to go to all kinds of places that normally folks didn't get to. And I want you to know, Colonel, I had the chance to tell the Israeli Defense Force that Americans were sorry for the shameless way that our president had treated Benjamin Netanyahu when he made him sit in the lunchroom and not even have a state snack with him. That was one of my most fun times in Israel.
Wow. That's some cool storytelling right there. And going back to the thing about the tanks and hoaxing the Syrians like that, that's almost direct from Scripture if you get down to it, because that's what Gideon in the book of Judges.
It's Gideon.
Exactly. Gideon and his folks, his 300 men, they literally had their torches inside of jars. And when on the same command, he told them, break the jars and hold the torch in the air and yell for God and Gideon. Mm-hmm. And when they did, apparently back in the day, you usually had a torch per X number of people. Well, all exactly. 300 of his guys had torches. The was it the Midianites, I believe? The Midianites thought there was like this massive army on the hillside, and it wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway,
yeah.
Good stuff, Allie. Appreciate you. You have a great day.
You're welcome, sir.
All right. You know what? There's things like that those unsung moments. You know, when I'm talking about in my monologue a minute ago, there's those unsung moments where someone inspires somebody or does something, and it becomes that unsung story, that thing that people don't even recognize happened, that some folks may never even realize, but it inspired somebody else to do something. You know, it's amazing the things that have happened over time that we'll never know the details of, but it was this one person who's saying, not on my watch, or one person who says, well, I'm going to change that, or somebody says, well, I can't let that go by. And they go get busy, and they do something, and it winds up having this massive effect. And so I'm just saying, folks, that was my monologue a minute ago, that there's a huge swath of people in this listening audience, I guarantee you, who underestimate your own capabilities every single day. You're literally saying, well, I don't know, man, I don't have the funds for that, or I'm not qualified for that, or no one would listen to me if I did, or what would I say, or I don't know. I guess I could spend all day, you know, finding excuses. We all could. But I'm just saying, somewhere something has got you kind of riled, and it may actually be your passion or your calling, and you might want to heed that and just see what you can do. And if you don't know what to do, ask somebody. Don't sit there and stew on it and go, I have no idea. Ask somebody who's a doer, somebody who you respect, somebody who you trust, somebody you think's got your back, and say, listen, what do you think? I'm thinking about this thing. I'm thinking about doing whatever. I'm thinking about causing a fuss. I'm thinking about, you know, writing a letter. And get the advice. Ain't nothing wrong with seeking wise counsel. In fact, I advise it. There. I hope that was wise counsel. There you go. All right, listen, we got a full show laid on for you. I got a brand new word for you. My good friend Irene, who has been working at my law firm now for, you know, almost a dozen years, Charlene and I have known her for years and years, but Irene said, I've got a word for you. And I thought, okay. And the word, I'm gonna lay it out clearly in a minute. The word is kekistocracy. I got a definition. I just put it out on my social media a minute ago. Kekistocracy. I'd never heard of this word. I like to think that I could win a Scrabble game on most days, but she gave me a word I had never heard of before. Kekistocracy. Starts with a K if you want to look it up first, but I'm going to give it to you in a minute because it goes straight to the number one on the Triple Dipper. You can't make this stuff up. That's number one. We'll be right back.